Okay. I think it's on.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Oh, hi. God in, panic out. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Dorothy. Hi. And so nice to see all your smiling faces this morning. It's great. And again, as everyone has said, thank you so much to the committee. You've just done marvels, as you always do, and you're so helpful and willing, just willing to do anything. And I had a ball this weekend. It was really great, great fun. I belong to the Women in Recovery in Boca Raton, Florida, and my sponsor, who's sitting over here, Rosemary, was the founding mother of that group. And the astonishing thing about that group just blows my mind is that every one of the group of women who were in that first forming of the group are still sober. Every single one of them. How about that? Some have died, some have left the state, but they died sober. And they are still sober wherever they are. So God bless them, and you, Rosemary. I got into the program when I was 48 years old. Took me a while. I drank for well over 30 years. I hung on to that. That was my touchstone. That's what I did. I had children. I had husbands. Did a lot of other things, but what I did was I drank. That was my constant. I now have 29 years of sobriety, so do the math. Or don't, either way. And I've said, at 29 years of sobriety, I think I've learned a lot. I think I've become teachable. I hope I have. I look out and I say 29 years of sobriety, and some of you probably aren't even 29 years old. But the good news is it's still the same. It's the same program. It's the same fellowship. It's the same steps, traditions, concepts. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. So I wish you joy and happiness as you go through the steps. Wherever you are, Enjoy it. Just give you a little background. My mother died when I was 2-3 years old. So my father had sent my older sister to live with our grandmother. And I went to live with an aunt and uncle. I'm a New Yorker, by the way, a certified Manhattanite. And he sent me down to Brooklyn to live with my aunt and uncle. And they were party people. I mean, it seems to run on the family. They were party people. And they would have friends over. And I was a cute little, golden-haired little child, And they would send me out in the middle of the room, and they'd say, well, go sing. I was like, okay. So from that age, I was kind of singing for my supper. And I'd go out and do, I'm a little teapot, short and stout, or boop, boop, be doop, which was very big at the time. I was good at boop, boop, be doop, and that stayed with me a long time. The other thing that they did was they would give me a little beer. So before I did my little show, I would have a little beer, and afterwards, I would have a little beer, and I got applause, and I got this wonderful feeling. So that kind of stayed with me for a long time, little beer, little applause, life is good, life is fine. And I did carry that. My first job, I've had a lot of jobs, I've had a lot of different jobs, and different is the way my life went. I'd go here, and then I get bored with that, and then I go there, and I get bored with that, and that was kind of it applied to everything, and I'll tell you more about that. But my first job, official job, was I was a showgirl. So now I had grown up. I was still singing for my supper, but now I had black tights and little headdresses and all that good stuff. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. At the time, I got the job because I was married to my first husband. And at 17, I married him. I was not a happy child at home, and I used to run away a lot. And they'd bring me back home, and I'd run away a lot. And I finally ended up in court as a juvenile delinquent. And they said, well, you're going home. And I said, I make a home, but I'm not staying there. So they allowed me to go down to a girls' club in New York City. And that's where I met a man that I got engaged to. And he went up to Boston to let his family know that he was bringing home this child bride. And he said to his roommate, Roy, take care of Dorothy while I'm away. And Roy did. So. So I married Roy. And by the way, he was the first of four. I've also stopped doing that. Stopped doing that. But I married Roy, and he was an Italian trapeze artist. He was a lot of fun. He really was. He swung. I'd get up in the morning sometimes, and I'd be going towards the kitchen to have coffee, and there would be Roy hanging by his teeth, one of his specialties, hanging by his teeth and spinning around. And I go, oh, wait, let me have coffee first, please. Yeah. Anyway. Roy and I had a daughter, my first daughter, coincidentally, first of four. And I just came back. I spent 2.5 months with her up in Rhode Island, and she was just a sheer delight. I had a ball. It was wonderful. But we had this daughter, so I gave up my career in show business, and I became a mom. And then I got bored, which was something I did a lot. You know, if I wasn't abused, I was bored. So I got a divorce. Now I'm a single woman. I'm living in New York City. I have this child. And it seemed to work. But at that point, I was drinking, maybe not on a daily basis, but certainly a lot. There was always a bottle of vodka in the freezer. There was a bottle of wine in the refrigerator, so I had my supply any morning, usually. I had a friend who used to call in the morning, and we would talk. She called like at 7:30 in the morning, good God. And I could hear the ice cubes tinkling in her glass, and I'd think, oh, Joan, for heaven's sakes, you know, you're drinking. Of course, I was drinking too, but since mine was in the freezer or the fridge, so I didn't need ice cubes. Throughout my drinking experience, I was always very sneaky. You know, I covered. You know, I think many of us have that trait. I covered my drinking very well for a couple of years until I just couldn't anymore. It got a little messy towards the end. But meanwhile, one of my jobs that I had to support myself, my daughter, you know, was in an attorney's office. So he was married. He had two children. But I decided he was what I wanted. He would be, and just if I wanted something, you better get out of my way. I had no idea. I had no thought of hurting anyone else. I didn't care. I wanted what I wanted. My kind of motto, truly at that time, was, I like it, I want it, I need it. Psh! That was justification enough for anything. So I got pregnant with my second daughter, and we ultimately got married. He got a divorce, and we got married. So I went from Italian trapeze artist to Jewish lawyer. You know, it was like, you know, as I said, you know, back and forth in my life. I used to move from the west side to the east side. And I'd get tired of the east side, and I'd say, no, I need more room, so I'd move back to the west side. And I couldn't afford the cabs coming over, so I'd move back. You know, I was in a constant state of flux. Never really happy with wherever I was. And it was difficult. We had two more daughters filling out my four daughters. And they're all just beautiful, bright, young women who somehow seem to have gotten past the alcoholic gene, if there is such a thing. I believe there is. But none of them have the problem and the lifestyle that I had. I married one more time, and it was really just kind of a... I don't know why we got married. He asked me. He asked me, and I said yes. And we got divorced shortly thereafter. And then I met my fourth husband. And he and I were together for 25 years. And they were tumultuous. I mean, you take two roaring drunks doing whatever else was around. But we were the entertainment of Murray Hill. You know, it's like, what's Tink and Denby doing? You know, what are they up to now? Who's living where? Are they together? Are they, you know, what? But we we were together for 25 years. At that point, I suddenly realized that my friend Ginny, who was my drinking buddy, Ginny and I used to go out. We knew every club, every bar in New York City. Name a corner, and I could tell you where the nearest after-hours club was, because closing at 4 o'clock was certainly not something that I wanted to do. I was ready to go. How I managed to show up at my job at 9, I have no idea. I just don't know, but I did, with increasing difficulty. So Ginny and I were running around tearing up Manhattan, picking up guys, dropping off guys, you know, doing. And I'd call her the next morning and say, do you have my sweater? Or, you know, we'd lose things along the way. We're just kind of trampling our way through Manhattan. And Ginny got into AA. So, and she was sneaky too. She was very, I asked her one time later, I said, why didn't you ever tell me that I was an alcoholic? Because I truly did not know. Swear to you, I had no idea that I was right next to her doing the things that she was doing, doing other alcoholic things, but somehow my justification for everything, I had a high degree of, you know, being able to justify things and why it was right. And she said to me, no, I knew you'd get it sooner or later, you know. And so she got into AA, and she was sneaky. She used to take me to meetings, and she'd say, come on, you got to hear this guy. You got to hear this gal. You know, come on over. I want you to meet somebody. And so I did, because she was my friend. And I thought it was wonderful. I thought AA was great for her, not me. Never even occurred to me that I would be here. But here I am, and grateful to be. So one day when I'm having my morning wine or vodka, whatever I was having at the moment, I suddenly got struck by this. You know, it's like, the only reason I came into AA, I certainly didn't wake up one morning and think, oh, I think I'll go to AA. I may have a problem. It's like, no. That was the first instance, and I didn't know it then, but that was the first instance of God doing for me what I could not do for myself, what was just incomprehensible to me at the time. So I called up Ginny, and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. I need some help. What am I going to do? And she said to me in her usual manner, well, sweetie, if you think so, you know, think about it. It might be so. And she hung up the phone. This was also my first sponsor. And then her father said to her, Ginny, I think that was a cry for help. So it was. It was a cry for help. And Ginny came over, and she sat with me while I had just bought a bottle of Courvoisier. And I thought, if I'm going into detox, I gotta finish this bottle before I go. And I did. I opened it up and I drank the entire thing. But Ginny helped me, you know, get in. I went to Smithers for detox, which I sorely needed. I had no idea of how sodden I was. You know, not just my mind, which was, forget about it, but my body was just, you know, full. You know, if I went like this, I'd be shaking some alcoholic fumes towards you. So Ginny came over, and she helped me through the, you know, do you have insurance, you know, so I went into Smithers, and I spent 7 days there, shaking my way towards sobriety. By the way, Ginny's mother and father were both in AA. And it took Ginny a little while, too, to get in, but she got in. Her mother's story is in the big book. Her mother's story is Fear of Fear. So, you know, I think about that, and I think about my friends, you know, the women, the men who've gone before me, and the people who are with me now. And I love the lineage. I just love thinking about all of those people who kept AA alive, who did whatever it took to keep this program, to keep this fellowship together and available for anyone who wants it. Not necessarily anyone who needs it, because we know there may be people who need it, but they don't want it yet. Anyway, I went into Smithers 7 days, and I came out full of piss and vinegar. I'm a reader. So what I did was I read everything that I could get my hands on. Big book, okay. 12 and 12, okay. Went to the library, got studies, got medical papers, got all this. I mean, I was shaking this program because my idea was I would kind of package it, get it all into a neat little package, and so that I got it, and then that was that. Then, you know, hey, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an AA, woo, whoopee for me. kind of didn't happen that way. When I went to my first meeting, which Ginny, you know, dragged me to, I'm looking at, you know, our 12 steps and 12 traditions, and of course I'm going, yep, uh-uh, no. No way. You've got to be kidding me. because I was determined that AA, you people, were not going to change the essence of Dorothy. Which was just so much rot, because I had no essence. I had no idea. I was the feather in the wind. I was just, you know, whatever you were, I was too. Whatever you thought, that's what I thought. But that was my attitude, you know. I was like, oh, no, not going to do that. The idea of having some stability, having some sense of responsibility towards other people was just so foreign to me. I had never done that, you know. My children, yes. My husband's, kind of. you know, the world scene, I didn't care. I didn't care about anybody. If I wanted it, that was what I got. So I started out with that attitude. I had attitude. I had New York attitude, which is dangerous. Very, you know. I was so cynical. The precepts that I lived by in my head had gotten me through a lot of stuff. I mean, that's who I was at that time. And I heard this thing of, you have to change, you have to change. And I thought, why? You know, why? I know what I'm doing. For heaven's sakes, I've done this for 48 years. But little by little, I kind of got the idea that maybe there was a better way. Maybe there was another way to do this thing. So I tried. I was in the program for a year and a half before I really got step two. I know when I walked in, I knew, boop, I was done. That was it. And I stayed in AA. I stayed in the program. I stayed in the fellowship. I was trying to work the steps. And I kept saying to Jenny, well, I'm on step three. And she was like, nope, you're not. Go back to step two. Well, step two was difficult for me because, first of all, for all of these years, I was God. Worked for me. You know, that was what, that was got me through a whole bunch of stuff. So that was a little difficult. And I finally had to give up being God, which was such a blessing because I did a lousy job of it. I mean, I am not equipped at all. So the relief of going, you know, hey, you know, higher power, now you up there, try to guide me a little bit. And I did. I could tell you so many stories of things that have happened in my life that have no reason to have occurred other than God pushing me in a direction. You know, it was like a little suggestion and then maybe a boot in the bun, and then it was the 2x4 over the head, and it was like, okay, I got it, you know, send me a memo the next time. But so step two was difficult, but I stayed. I just stayed because I knew I was home. I was home. I got married to my fourth husband. He had also gotten into the program, which I didn't know, but he had gotten into the program a little bit before I did. And then I got into the program, and then we got together again and decided we're going to get married because obviously this was, you know, just a message from God. This was clearly a message from God. And Jenny kept saying to me, Dorothy, you're not supposed to change anything for the first year, please. And I said, no, I'm not changing anything. You know, we've been together before. You know, now we're just getting married. And by the way, we're moving to Florida. Hey, so, and she kept saying, no. And I had a severe case of the yeah buts. You know those. Yeah, your sponsor tells you something and you say, yeah, but, you know, yeah, but. So at 9 months sober, being all full of joy and the wonder of the program, I moved down to Florida. Okay, so I didn't realize, by the way, that the country, because I had a great job in New York. I was really doing very well, thank you very much. I discovered computers somewhere in the 80s, and I just, you know, the most unlikely thing, you know, I was not mathematical, I was not science, but for some reason, that got me. So I was running some large company's computer system, and I moved out to Florida. Couldn't find a job to save my soul. Just could not do anything. I finally got a job with the city of Deerfield Beach. I was their computer instructor, and I couldn't live on the salary that they were paying. I was like, you're kidding. How much? Well, I don't get out of bed for that. Yeah. But I got out of bed. I suited up. I showed up. And I did the job. Then I took a second job. So I was working 8 to 5. 8? I got to show up at 8? You know, that's, you know, inhuman. And then right after that, I went. A cousin had a card shop in Meisner Park. So I would leave my office, I would go to Meisner Park, and I'd work until 11 o'clock. And I did, I did that 4 days during the week, and Saturday, and Sunday, all day. I was exhausted, but I was, you know, paying my bills and everything. Mostly because somewhere around our one-year anniversary, Jerry decided, this was a shock to me. It was the first time someone had told me that they wanted a divorce. It was like, what? How can you do that? You know, I've studied wife. I know how to do wife, for God's sakes. So we got divorced. We did get back together again. And we've been friends. He died, unfortunately, but we were friends, not married, but good friends for a long time. One of the things that happened to me with my second husband, Jewish lawyer, Italian trapeze, Jewish lawyer, seaman, and Jerry was what is kindly called an entrepreneur. He sailed a little bit close to the law, you know, and he'd kind of wander off once in a while. But he was just, he was the darling of my life, he truly was. But my second husband had kidnapped my children, or the three that were his, and took them out of the country. And I did not know where they were for 11 years. Yeah, wow. Now you think, I would never say that that's what caused my alcoholism, because I'm very well aware that I was an alcoholic before that. But the pain of that was so intense that I just dived into a bottle. I don't think I drew a completely sober breath during that time. I went to detectives. I went to the court. And at that point, having children kidnapped was like one step above spitting on the sidewalk. It was parental interference. And there was just nothing that the law would do for me. Everyone was terribly sorry that I was in this mess, but they couldn't do anything. I think that's changed a little, thankfully. So now I do have my children back. The oldest of that three has moved to Florida because she decided I was the only sane, sober person in the family. And she wanted to be with me. She wanted to be next to me. So she and her four children now, I live in Boynton Beach. She lives in Hypoluxo. So, you know, it's just been wonderful. And to have them back, there are still rough patches because they didn't have a mother. They didn't have a real mother for all of that time. And some of the stories that they told me about lack of information, lack of guidance, lack of love, just breaks my heart. And I try to do everything now to make up to them for that. Anyway, back to today. I joined Women in Sobriety. Women in Recovery, I always do that. You know, we are sober, but we're Women in Recovery in Boynton Beach, and found a real home group. I got very, very involved in service. I went through all of the, you know, I went to intergroup, I did a lot in intergroup, blah, blah, and then I went over to general service, and I just love the general service. You know, everybody says, oh, it's so political, you know. I didn't really find it so. So I went through, you know, GSR, blah, blah, DCM, blah. I went up to some of the officer positions. And actually, I just stopped about 2 years ago until they called me back to be on a service committee, which was like, okay, fine. And I keep saying to people, this is it, guys. This is it. I am not doing anything more for General Service until they call me again. I had a sponsee, excuse me. I do ask my sponsees, I don't require it of them, but I ask strongly that they do some service. Doesn't have to be an intergroup, doesn't have to be in General Service. We had a friend whose mission was she would take anyone to the doctor, to the hospital. She would sit with you. If anybody said, oh, I have an appointment for the doctor, she would go over to them, I'll take you. I'll be with you there. And I know that she has taken people that she really wasn't terribly fond of, but that's what her service was. And I would say, I don't care if you, you know, chair a meeting, you have sponsor, you know, whatever you do, pay back something. Get involved. You know what this is about. You know, read some of the books. Know what's happening here. Excuse me. So I had this one sponsee, and she was very reluctant. And I said to her, there was a spaghetti dinner. And I said to her, go serve the spaghetti. Get behind that counter and help them. Put some spaghetti on a plate. Throw on a roll. Give them some salad. And smile and say, thank you for being here. She's like, Yeah. I don't wanna. I heard echoes of myself coming through. It's like, yeah, just do it, just for tonight, you know, just once. So she did, and she called me the next morning. She said, Dorothy, I had such a wonderful time. It was so great. I met so many people. Well, I'm just, you know, she was full of the, and I said to her, honey, you just learn the secret of service. That's what it is. It is a joy. It's great to be able to serve. It's great to be able to serve this program, which has given me my life, a very happy life, a very peaceful life. I stand here. I'm a prime example of progress, but way away from perfection. I kind of hope that I never really get to perfection, because then what do you do? But my life in AA has been a series of, you know, just aside from the steps, it's been a series of steps, and I'll do something, and then I'll go along for a time until something else happens. It'll be, oh, it's either an aha moment or an oh shit moment. And they're both very instructive to me. One of the first big ones that I had was I had come down, my first group in Florida was a Wednesday night women's meeting up at Bethesda Church in Palm Beach. Most beautiful church, just stunning. And I was the coffee person. I would set up for the meeting, and of course I was going to be the best coffee person ever. So I went in and I'd set up way before time, and I was sitting out in the kind of the little opening that they had, whatever. And I'm sitting there and I'm going through. Now, remember, I'm just around a year sober, so I'm, you know, I'm really not doing too well wrapped. And I'm sitting going through my, you know, crisis du jour, whatever it was, hitting my head, what's it all about? What is happening? You know, what am I going to do? And from absolute pure silence, because I was all alone out there, what I heard was, hallelujah. What? What? And it wasn't really God, although maybe it was. It was the choir starting their choir practice. And it was I had been very, you know, remember I was reading books, I was trying to synthesize this whole thing. It was the first time I just had an absolute belly laugh. And all of the seriousness that I had, all of this, you know, ponderous seriousness, just kind of fell away. And that was it. I laughed, and it was like, I think I got it. I think I've got it. I think I've got it. And it was the start of my real life in AA. It was the start of my participating. It was the start of my loving this program, anyone in this program. It was an incredible experience. So I went home, and in my guest room, I have a tapestry that says, "Hallelujah, anyway. Whatever is happening, hallelujah, anyway." Because where you are, where I am now, is certainly better than I was at any time in my life before this. Got to give a little nod to Pat Dawson, who's one of my... he's just such an elf. He was a wonderful, wonderful man, and very kind of instructive in my sobriety. And Pat used to say, "I've never had it so good, and the best is yet to come." And that's the way I feel about this program, and I thank you all. And if I can close with something that I say at the close of every meeting, after our prayer, what I say is, yay, team. Thank you.